This is Who's Talking on Fox Sports 910. Diehard Wahoo Frank Maloney and former Wahoo basketball standout Jim Hobbo Hobgood break down the Cavaliers each week by bringing you inside the game and behind the scenes of UVA sports with all-star interviews and unique insight that only Frank and Hobbo can provide. Who's Talking is brought to you by Ortho Virginia, LeClaire Ryan Law, TGI Fridays, Town Bank of Richmond, TheSaver.com, Richmond Allergy and Asthma Specialists, Hildrup Moving and Storage, Kelleher Heating and Air, the Virginia Athletics Foundation, Lemaire Restaurant at the Jefferson Hotel, Holly Martin Partners, and West Hampton Cleaners, with special contributions from Sarge Reynolds and Buford Scott. Now, Who's Talking is on Fox Sports 910. Here's Frank and Hobbo.
Well, sort of. Hobbo, at least. Frank will be joining us at the bottom of the hour. He had an out-of-state commitment, so he's going to call in just after 6:30. But welcome to Who's Talking ACC Tournament Edition. And to my left, friend of the program, longtime Virginia analyst, and another Virginia basketball standout, Terry Gates, was kind enough at the 11th hour to agree to come in and occupy. So in this studio tonight, you got basketball knowledge that could fill a thimble, I think.
That's right. But much an upgrade from last week, I'm sure.
Absolutely, absolutely. Speaking of basketball, Wally Walker will be calling in here shortly. It'll be great to have Wally on the show. You know, and it's hard to believe it, the 40th anniversary of that ACC tournament win in Landover. I may mention that to him. I'm not sure it's going to make him happy. A long time ago.
You know, that is, and that's just before my time, but I've heard the stories, or most of them. I might hear some more tonight, but yes, that was the kind of the beginning, and it's come circled back around.
Well, 40th anniversary, the tournament back in Washington again. It may be a nice follow-up for the Hoos to get another ACC crown this coming weekend and maybe have a third Everett Case set. I'm sure Wally would be happy to have Wally Walker, Joe Harris, and Malcolm Brogdon as Everett Case Award winners.
You know, of any team that's probably prepared to doing that, I think this team, after Saturday night, I think they've finally come home, and I think they're kind of at peace with who they are and what they have to do. And, you know, now it's just they're hoping to play 9 more basketball games.
Yeah. Yeah, they got to, 24-6. I was thinking today they got to at least get to the regional final to get another 30-win season. And if you get that far, what the heck, you might as well go for 33 wins and win it all.
30 won't get it done for this bunch, though. You know, I think their expectations are a little higher than 30, though.
Hey, Ray, 345-0910 is the phone number, particularly in the second half of the show. We'll have Frank join us for a few minutes, but Terry and I will be here to analyze, break down the season, look at the ACC tournament, look ahead to the NCAA tournament. It's funny, a few weeks ago I was in the media room, and a lot of conversation about who Virginia would play and where they would play in the NCAA tournament. And I sat there and I thought, really, things have come a long way, because a few years ago it was if Virginia would play, not when and where.
And now it's a matter of if you they're a one seed if they win the tournament. I mean, it's pretty simple, simple.
Yeah, and probably even a two if they don't.
Right.
But we'll have a lot more. Were you at the game Saturday?
Yes, I was.
Your assessment of the game on Saturday?
You know, there's so much emotions there. There was so much, the fans were into it. Obviously, the players are into it. It's you don't often see five seniors per se. They're fifth and fourth year players with that amount of involvement in a program. Even though Malcolm is a fifth year, he had a red shirt year. Gil is a fifth year with a transfer year in there, and to see Mike Toby and Evan Nolte finish out their careers in seasons that they would probably have to say were disappointing. Not the minutes that they had hoped for, not the production they had hoped for, but certainly on Saturday night at 8:30, both Mike Toby and Evan Nolte came
to
play.
Where was that Mike Toby all year long?
Yeah, what did he have for pregame? I don't know.
I mean, he came out like a man possessed. He was Mr. Windex on the glass. What, 20 rebounds? Was that
20 rebounds and 15 points, and even the students serenaded him there at the end. And it's you know, he wants to be the player that you want him to be, but it's just not in his nature to be a complete banger, a physical presence.
Yeah.
Now,
do you think part of it was his disappointment early on that he wasn't a starter from the outset of the season? Or it seems like something happened to his confidence along the way? Or
I don't think it's being a starter, but part of that is when you're not a starter, you're not getting the minutes you had hoped for. You're not getting meaningful minutes.
Right.
And you know he's picked on. If you're if you're the second team center and the officials want to clean it up, they're going to pick on him. He's moving in three quarter time sometimes compared to everybody else. And you know if he brings the ball down, everyone's stripping at it. It's he's like a marked man out there sometimes, and it's hard. And everyone thinks because it's a 10-foot goal and you're 7 feet, it's real easy. But there are some very, very good athletes between you and the rim on most plays.
And some other guys who, if they're not 7 feet, they're close.
And they get off
and strong.
And they get off the floor quicker than you do. So
yeah.
it is not that easy to score from 3 or 4 feet if. With the athletes in this league that are trying to stop you from scoring.
Yeah, witness the Miami game. I was a little frustrated with Mike at the Miami game because inside the last minute with the Who's Down one, he got the ball about 2 feet from the basket and was not able to convert or get fouled, which I thought was a key moment in that game. But as you say, you got guys out there defending, trying to keep him from scoring.
And they're quicker off their feet, and there's nothing he can really do about that. And they're only going. They're not have to jump that high. It's the first one there gets the prize, so it's tough.
But good for him. I mean, yeah. What a nice way to end your final game at JPJ to have a memory of that kind of performance.
Well, believe me, after you mentioned the Miami game, he couldn't have felt very good about himself after Miami game. He's not trying to miss, but it's one of those things where that's a nice memory for him to have after the Miami game.
All right, we think we got Wally on the phone. Just he's a man that generally doesn't need much introduction. He's one of the retired jurors. He's hanging from the rafters. Everett Case Award winner, as we said, 1976. I think sixth or seventh on the all-time scoring list, and a former teammate of mine and a good friend. Wally, we appreciate you taking a couple of moments to join us tonight.
Hey, Hobo. Good to be here. Thank you.
And we got Terry Gates in the house, too, so it's all basketball tonight.
Hey, Terry.
Real quick, 40 years since your Everett Case ACC title. Can you believe it's been that long ago?
No. Where did the four decades go? Did somebody help me with that?
Well, you're still youthful looking. You probably could still go out and play.
You know, I've got a new metal knee, and I can't tell you how much that's helped. I'm thinking maybe I can. In College Game Day, I thought maybe I can lock down some of those 20-year-olds again.
Yeah, I sent you an email. What was that all about, Seth Greenberg giving you grief about your defense? You actually played a little D back in the day.
Well, no, I did by my senior year. Prior to that, he was right, but I was terrible defensively. But I know hit him since 1972, and I was always better than he was.
Well, you know, my attitude was, if you let the other team score real quick, you got the ball back.
Bingo. Those are the days.
Well, speaking about the retired 41 in the rafters, what are the chances that we're going to see a number 15 up in the rafters one of these days?
Well, I don't see how you can't retire his number, given what he's done for the program and now ACC Player of the Year, and just for everything he's done on and off the court. There's you just can't find a better guy. I had the pleasure last week, just over a week ago, sitting down with him at his request. He just wanted to ask some questions and visit, and of course, I knew what a great guy he is. But that just reinforced it. He's real.
What do you think his prospects of playing at the next level are? Since you obviously have a lot of experience, not only having played in the NBA, but been an executive for a long time.
Yeah, we talked about that a lot, and I think he's got great chances. I think if he gets in the right system, he can be in the NBA and be a contributing player in the NBA for a very long time. The opposite is also true. If he gets in the wrong place with somebody just going to value explosive jumping or something other than what he brings, then he could get lost in a shuffle. But if he gets in the right situation, somebody appreciates the fact that you can't put him in a bad position on the floor defensively. He can guard the quick guys. He can guard the strong guys. And if a team switches, whoever he switches on, he can guard. Now he's become more of a knockdown open shooter, which a wing player has to be. A team that really is concerned with winning and not for, you know, just some potential pie in the sky would should just take him in the first round.
I'm going to let Terry jump here in a minute, but just real quick, from the standpoint of the Hoos, obviously they had a little bit of a, I guess you might call it a mid-season slump there, but are they playing their best basketball right now?
Yeah, well, I was at the North Carolina game, and that was a game for men, first of all. The refs let them play, and that was a great test against a team that I was worried about the matchup because of North Carolina's length. So just and watching that Louisville game, on Saturday, they're playing great basketball and can beat anybody.
Yeah, I mean it's you're right about North Carolina. I mean, I somebody in the press room before the game said if you took North Carolina's players 6 through 10, made them a separate team, that team would probably qualify for the NCAA tournament. So I mean, the talent on the North Carolina team is just incredible. So Virginia and again. They did a terrific job in the second half shutting down Joel Berry, the guards. They contained Bryce Johnson. So just a heck of a win there in Charlottesville a couple of weeks ago. It would be nice. We're getting ahead of ourselves, but maybe we'll see Carolina again this coming Saturday up there in Washington.
It'd be nice because we know what that means. They're in that final on Saturday night.
Terry, you got a quick question for the number 41 here?
Of all the teams Virginia has, this one, at times, the personality is such, it's so laid back, and London Perrante is coming from the left coast out there, is part of that, and certainly Malcolm, you've met him and sat down and talked to him. These are very non-assuming guys, you know, when you see him walking around and you talk to him, but I know there's a fire in there because of the desire to excel, but at times, it's been frustrating this year, but it was very nice to see on Saturday night, even after they could not win the regular ACC championship, for them to come out and do what they did to Louisville and do it in the style. And I'm from Louisville now, and you know I went to the game at Louisville in this one to beat that team and to beat that program twice in the same year by, 20 points. It's kind of mind-boggling, but we've seen them this year on the other end where – you know, how do you lose to Virginia Tech at a Castle Coliseum, you know, at 9 p.m. on July 4th, and it's half full. So it's I think they've got everything under control now. It's a matter of just going out and doing it, but there's a lot of teams that can say that, I guess.
Yeah, well, one place we're vulnerable, no matter, you know, how well we defend, and certainly the defense was really good at year end, is if you get somebody, you know, making threes. And when you do your double team inside, and particularly if you've got a decent post guy that you have to double team, and then if you rotate, if the other team has a guy knocking down, or two knocking down threes, and we can't get a rotation over there, which happened in that Virginia Tech game down there, then you're vulnerable. I mean, any team is, but just we are because of the way we play.
Right.
Louisville, you know, is a team that didn't shoot that well, so as talented and hard as they play, against our defense, they're really susceptible.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a difference, as you say. A lot of teams want to put the ball on the floor and attack the seams of the defense, and against Virginia, generally, there aren't that many seams. they're designed to prevent seams.
There were some early in the year, you know, even going back to that first loss against GW that we weren't used to seeing. I think I was on your show shortly after that, Hobbo, and but they really tightened up in that aspect.
Well, a big part of that is with Tony's defense. If you can guard that person off the dribble and not have the defense broken down, Virginia does a pretty good job coming out of double teams down low, getting out and getting a hand in the face of shooters. So, you know, it's really the dribble penetration breakdown, the dribble penetration and kick that where the defense really struggles relative to giving up really good looks.
Yeah, anytime the help has to come over. One thing also has changed since early in the year when we struggle more defensively is the refs have quit calling it quite as tightly. So, you know, not every move, dribble drive to the basket is a foul on the defense as it was early.
How is Brogdon so good defensively? I mean, he doesn't impress one as the most athletic guy in the world, but yet he is an unbelievable on-ball defender.
Strength. Well, it's a great question because he and I talked about that, and I've talked to some of my NBA friends about it too. He's not classically athletic, but his athleticism comes in unclassical ways. And one of those is he's got great lateral quickness. For a guy that you don't say, he's not explosive, but he moves laterally really well, which gets undervalued as an athletic trait. He also is strong. Yeah. And he also has those great hands and balance. And these were his own words. He's got great body control. Those are forms of athleticism that I don't think get appreciated enough by scouts and may not be appreciated as much for Malcolm. But more people see him, particularly decision makers, the more they know what he does to help a team win. They'll figure it out.
Well, clearly a complete player. I tell you what, Wally, are you willing? We're coming up against our first break. Will you hang in through the break, and we'll finish up with you after we get back. We're visiting with Wally Walker. You're listening to Who's Talking. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more with Wally after these messages.